Hello, I'm Marcia Mary Baker with The LaRouche Show, today, August 17th. I'm the economics editor for Executive Intelligence Review, and I have with me today in our studios a very important guest, Anton Chaykin. I want to tell you about him. First, let me tell you that we'll be on for the full hour until 4 o'clock Eastern Time. And in a minute, I'll give you the phone numbers. You're welcome to phone in with any questions to Mr. Chaykin. And as you know, you can always send us email your live questions that we can answer. Now, Anton Chaykin, you many of you know, is the history editor for Executive Intelligence Review. And he's been, in recent weeks, a key part of the investigative team that's putting together the kind of what you could call history of corruption that's behind the political figures in the United States, Senator John McCain and Senator Joe Lieberman. Let me say that when it comes to history, he has two books that everyone should know about, some of you have read. He was the principal author of George Bush, the Unauthorized Biography. He was also the author of the American history called Treason in America, from Aaron Burr to Averill Harriman. So Tony Chaykin is very qualified to do the job that we are having done, Lyndon LaRouche commissioned to be done, on looking at these two political figures I mentioned, Senators McCain and Lieberman, and the role they're playing today to gum up the works on what kind of political policy dialogue we should be having on what to do about the direction of our country at time of crisis. Just before I turn it over to Tony Chaykin, let me mention a couple of quick things about the context in which we're talking today that's happened in the world in terms of the financial breakdown crisis in the whole system, not just one corporation, one country, and the economic breakdown. Now, let's look at headlines. Look at the United States. You have the whole transportation sector in de facto breakdown. U.S. Air had to declare bankruptcy, United Airlines in trouble, and these are our big ones. The rail system, Amtrak in trouble. Look at the high-speed lines in the Northeast, the Acela Express, which has been the jewel of the Northeast travel. They're grounded this weekend, the 8 locomotives, 15 other high-speed locomotives, because of certain things they're investigating. But, in fact, it isn't just something that needs normal repair. It's our system breaking down. Let's take it differently, out of transportation into something like public health. As we speak, 38 states in our country have the presence of West Nile virus, something that could have been easily dealt with if you dealt with mosquitoes in recent decades, but we did not in terms of public health. We have more deaths this week, and I'll just mention in passing, Lyndon LaRouche said, let's get back to our senses. He called yesterday for ending the ban on DDT, which was done back in 1972, and deal with this crisis. So that brings us to the question before us in all respects. I've only talked about the United States, but in trouble also are Brazil, whole nations, Argentina, Uruguay, elsewhere in the world, Turkey. The policy question as to how we're going to deal with this is before us, because what's discredited is things like 10 days ago offering $30 billion to Brazil by the International Monetary Fund, which has made no difference. We have to have a change. That's where, as you know, Lyndon LaRouche has been leading the policy dialogue on this abroad. Today he's speaking in Los Angeles at an important meeting of the Institute of Sino-Strategic Studies on what to look for as the role of China in this crisis situation. And next week, that's August 24th, from 3 to 4 o'clock Eastern Time, Lyndon LaRouche will be on this show speaking about the latest, giving his evaluation on the latest situation. Now, this is where we come back to the United States and our guest. We have had the apparent alternatives to the White House policy problem being offered by Joe Lieberman in the Democratic side or John McCain. They want to have a war on Iraq. They want to have a new economy, not a physical rescue, reconstructed economy. But I'll let our guest speak about that because he is the author of what's now gone into three versions of a dossier as to, in fact, who these guys are and why they should be shoved aside. Tony Chaykin, please take over right now.
Lyndon LaRouche in launching an all-out drive for the presidency in the United States has declared war on the war makers, the people in the Lieberman and McCain faction and the Pentagon faction and the Wall Street faction that are demanding Bush go to war, and they've been using blackmail tactics. This faction is in fact the criminal center of America's enemies. And we have, up to this day, been distributing somewhere over 3 million leaflets in this country to expose the fact that the organized crime networks of Meyer Lansky and others created the careers of these two men in the Senate, and that these guys who are acting to the right of President Bush and demanding war and demanding a surrender to the worst nightmare fantasies of the future from Wall Street, these guys have to be destroyed. And we intend to do that to clear the way for a Roosevelt solution. When we speak of Lieberman and McCain, we're talking about the last phase of the criminalization of this country. Now, in thinking about this, you who are listening should reflect on how the United States has changed in a way of bringing criminal activities into the mainstream as the regular way of life of our country, in business, in social relations, and in the way you think about your own self. Many of you in your families or your friends have some direct relationship to this criminality. So let's look at how this has been done. Let's start with John McCain. He's a Republican from Arizona in the United States Senate, and he was brought into the Congress back in 1982, sponsored by two gentlemen in particular. One of them was very famous later on, Charles Keating, a bandit who stole from savings and loan institutions and eventually went to prison. He sponsored McCain's career from the very beginning. And a guy named Jim Hensley, H-E-N-S-L-E-Y, John McCain's father-in-law, who was a beer distributor and got that position from the mafia out in Arizona. Those two gentlemen, with their billions, sponsored McCain and made sure that he got into the Congress and represented their criminalization of the United States economy. There's a similar picture with Lieberman, which I'll get to in a few minutes. Let's look back at what happened in Arizona. And you get, this is a microcosm of the United States as a whole. Nobody really lived in Arizona on any scale until after World War II, when after air conditioning had been invented. And you had a decision by the powers in Wall Street and London at that time that they would try to prevent Arizona in particular and some other states around there from ever getting development in a modern sense. No industry, no agriculture as you had it in the Midwest or Pennsylvania, and to make it a paradise for crime, real estate scams, gambling, prostitution, and other forms of criminality. This was to be a base for the new age that they were going to bring to the country. The godfather of crime in Arizona, who was the man most responsible for actually launching John McCain's career, was a man named Kemper Marley. John McCain first got elected to the Congress in 1982. This was 2 years after McCain had gone to Arizona, divorced his first wife, who had stayed by him when he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. He just dumped her and married the young blonde daughter of Jim Hensley, the millionaire mob-appointed head of a beer distributor. 2 years later, he got into the Congress. at that point in Arizona history, there was one great excitement in politics, and this is that Hensley and others had been named in a powerful investigation of organized crime that was going on at the time. Back in 76, 4 years before McCain married into the Hensley family, an investigative reporter named Don Bolles, B-O-L-L-E-S, had been assassinated, had been bombed to death with his car blown up by the mafia representatives, because he had shown that Hensley and Kemper Marley, his boss, and the Emprise company, the Jacobs family of the old Bronfman syndicate, and many other elements, up to 200 mafia members that had moved out to Arizona, had all been controlling the state of Arizona, controlling the politics top down. And Bolles was blown up before he could do any more on this kind of an investigation. When McCain married into this family, and he at this point he has perhaps $100 million from that source through his wife, when he married into the family, the trials were still going on by for the bombing death of Don Bolles. Let's look at Kemper Marley. He was a boss of land scams, real estate scams, and of the liquor trade. Jim Hensley, McCain's father-in-law and benefactor, and his brother, Eugene Hensley, were both convicted of skimming from the liquor trade. Eugene went to prison for 5 years. 50 employees of Marley were convicted of this criminal fraud, mafia style. And because Hensley had taken the fall for Kemper Marley, Marley set him up in the liquor trade after Marley himself was appointed by the Bronfman family of Canada, the Seagram's liquor people, tied into the old syndicates of Lansky. How did Kemper Marley get into this? Well, go back to 1941. A man named Gus Greenbaum, Meyer Lansky's partner, set up in Phoenix, Arizona, the Transamerica Publishing and Wire Company. That's the bookies, the bookmakers' wire for the horse race tracks, for the mob in Chicago. And this was the Western wire for the bookies. He appointed Kemper Marley his assistant. In 1946, after World War II, Gus Greenbaum made Kemper Marley the day-to-day manager of this bookies wire service, while Gus, who lived in Arizona, went about the business of setting up the gambling casinos in Las Vegas, using Phoenix as the base for the mob to set up Las Vegas. Bugsy Siegel was working for Lansky and Greenbaum at that period, and when Bugsy Siegel did not come up with enough money for these mobsters, the generally accepted story in Las Vegas is that Greenbaum, on behalf of Lansky, had Bugsy Siegel shot to death. This is in 1947. Back and forth between Phoenix and Las Vegas, Gus Greenbaum, Mo Dalitz, and other gangsters, based in Arizona and doing their dirty work to build up the gambling casinos in Las Vegas. What occurred then in Arizona was that the whole state was retarded in its development, limited to retirement communities, tourism, and gambling as the main activities. People were sold land in the real estate speculation without any hope of really having anything developed there. McCain was then boosted more and more into the upper echelons of politics and got into the U.S. Senate, elected in 1986, thanks to the backing of Charles Keating. Now, Keating became famous for using McCain and four other politicians who became known as the Keating Five. And Keating's congressman was John McCain. McCain, in a sense, joined the Keating family. He and his family flew on the corporate planes of Keating, this gangster, at least nine times in the period of the investigations that were going on into the looting of the savings and loans by Keating. He went down to the Caribbean with his family. He had hundreds of contributions, $1,000 each, from Keating family and from the employees. Keating and McCain together were trying to get into the regulatory apparatus of the United States. One of their henchmen, a guy who was also contributing to Keating, to McCain's campaigns, a guy named Henkel, a crooked lawyer from Atlanta, and they actually got President Reagan to appoint this guy to the Federal Home Loan Bank Board to try to stop the regulators from finding out or blocking the looting of the savings and loans that were going on.
So you're saying this is Enronomics long before there was an Enron.
Exactly right. And McCain, when he's is spoken of now as a reformer, this is the sickest kind of joke that you could imagine. What was going on then is that the Phoenix-based company of Charles Keating had taken over savings and loan in California, Lincoln Savings, and used it as a base for not only looting the thousands of small savers in California, but people from throughout the country by using junk bonds and using brokered deposits, taking advantage of federal insurance that had been set up to stabilize the whole industry by Franklin Roosevelt, to steal billions and billions of dollars, and to make that money go through the coffers of Carl Lindner, the head of the international corporation that runs the dope trade in South America, the United Fruit Company. He's the chairman. Lindner was a partner with Keating. He's also a backer throughout McCain's career. Michael Milken, Sir James Goldsmith, noted blackmailer and financier of leftist terrorists as well as right-wing politics. These people were the beneficiaries of a constant stream, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, through this Arizona corporation, some of the loot of which was financing the campaigns to Congress and Senate of McCain. McCain got famous in this briefly when he met with regulators in two famous meetings in April of 1987, and demanded that they lay off of Keating. It was right after then that the prosecution of Keating took place, and later on in the political career of Keating of McCain, his emergence as the darling of the bandits, the worst criminal element in Wall Street that survived all of the downfall of people like Keating and Milken, who went to prison. McCain never went to prison. He was simply rebuked by the Ethics Committee, but he was so well protected that he never went to prison. And his criminal background is so well known in Arizona that he has really very little popularity. That state is controlled top down to the present time by this multi-generational criminal apparatus. Let's look it over at Mr. Lieberman. All right, now, to really understand both of these guys, Lieberman and McCain, look at the change that took place under leadership such as they have been providing. When Franklin Roosevelt was president, he regulated finance to get people have confidence to put money in the bank, but also he built infrastructure. And this country recovered from a Great Depression and became again a great power industrially. What these guys did was to turn over the country entirely to gangsterism and to take down the physical industries of the country. One of the victims of this are American Indians, known recently as Native Americans. And they were told, especially out west, there is not going to be any industry. You're not going to have jobs. You're going to be poor. You're going to be destroyed. Your land, which contains oil and coal and other minerals, will not be developed. You're going to be destroyed. However, we're going to give you a little break. Some of you can make can take some of the leavings, the droppings from the gangsters who will develop gambling casinos. Both Lieberman and McCain played a crucial role in setting up Indian gambling casinos, the worst screwing that the Indians have had since the Cherokees were forced out of their land in Georgia back in the 19th century. Now let's look at Mr. Lieberman. Lieberman was elected to the United States Senate in 1988, backed by William F. Buckley, the monarchist, the right-wing fascist pervert in the crazy sector of the Republican Party, who backed him openly for his race for Senate. When the money ran out for that campaign, Lieberman was flown down to Miami, where he met with Mascanosa, the head of the terrorist wing of the Cuban exiles, who had been in the circles of Meyer Lansky in the gambling casino operations down in Cuba before Castro. You know, when they talk about it's either Castro or our system. Well, the system that was there before Castro wasn't our system. It was the system of the gangsters set up by people like the Dulles brothers and the old British Empire apparatus in Wall Street and in Central America. This was never our system. Our system was an industrial republic that we built up in opposition to these creeps. So the Cuban exile community, the right wing, the terrorist wing of it, gave their money and backing to Lieberman.
So this is 1988.
1988. He gets into the Senate. But how did he get to be such a big shot? If he has that kind of backing, ordinary Democrats are not going to back somebody like that. Remember, this is a guy who was at Yale and switched over from being apparently pro-civil rights and pro, FDR-type politics to being a right-winger when he got into the Anglophile networks of the Yale College, the Yale Daily News. That's when he started meeting with Mr. Buckley. But what happened is he got into an apparatus that the Wall Street and the old gangster elements had put into the Democratic Party. This is called the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC. DLC was founded by an outright gangster, a mafia man named Michael Steinhardt, whose father, when his father got out of prison, out of Sing Sing and Dannemora, where he had been put because he was the fence for the Lansky gang, his father began funneling huge amounts of cash into Michael Steinhardt for a Wall Street hedge fund for a speculation operation, and he was a partner with this mob father of his, building up to become a billionaire speculator. He founded the Democratic Leadership Council. He, Steinhardt, was never a Democrat. He was always a right-wing creep. And he turned over the chairmanship of the Democratic Leadership Council in 1995 to Joe Lieberman, who was apparently a nobody, but was then built up by this apparatus. Just add it up. What do you have? Add up Cuban exiles of the right-wing terrorist variety, Buckley and his monarchists and his perverts, the Bronfman gang and the Lansky syndicate out of Canada that backed Steinhardt. If you put those features together, look at this and compare this to the what you see around the Kennedy assassination. Our country was subjected to what you have to call a coup d'etat with the murder of John Kennedy. And it was only our movement and what LaRouche has done to force a revival of Franklin Roosevelt and Lincoln and the earlier American paradigm that has given us a chance to rescue this country from this filth. We are now dedicated to bringing Lieberman's career to an end by the end of this month. He is virtually untouchable now. We're going to finish the job. The same thing with John McCain. We are getting tremendous indications that what we are doing is working out. Everybody that thinks of themselves as a senior member of the political establishment, is his mind is racing a mile a minute. Shall I get on board and say no Iraq war, as LaRouche is demanding?
Let me ask you right now. Thank you, Tony. And let me ask you to develop that further. Tony Chaykin, who has visited Iraq in recent years as part of direct fact-finding and so forth, but you just mentioned Lieberman and McCain, their political credibility is going down the drain fast. But they were among the two most out front spokesmen on a war on Iraq. Is that the case?
That's right. They went together to Germany, to the Verkunde meeting of the defense ministers months ago. And from that platform and others, they have both demanded that George Bush invade Iraq, invade Saudi Arabia, and do the most insane military adventures and provocations that would result in the United States being destroyed.
So in other words, they are serving as a kind of political blackmail on what the White House ought to do or not.
The form this takes is that Lieberman's Democratic Leadership Council has officially sponsored the publication of a scenario. They're doing this again and again from Lieberman, that John McCain, unless Bush does what they say and goes to war, and follows Ariel Sharon and into mayhem and catastrophe, unless Bush does that, that John McCain will run for president on a third party, like Teddy Roosevelt did in 1912, which got the Republicans out of office. They went, that's the scenario, and then Lieberman would be elected as president of the United States. We're
Tony,
interfering with that directly.
Great. Now, what I'm going to do is I'll make a few announcements now, and I want you to come back to that third-party idea and take it from there, and I want people to be on standby, especially on the conference call, to get their questions ready. I want you to all know you are listening to The LaRouche Show. It's weekly from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. It's live on the web, and you can send in your live questions by email. As you know, that's actually at radio@larouchepub.com. Again, those of you who want to send live questions, radio@larouchepub.com, radio@larouchepub.com. And I want to make clear, you can call in and get the dossiers we're talking about by Anton Chaykin and others on this McCain-Lieberman scandal, but at call in any time at 1-888-EIR, that's 347-EIR-3258. I'll give it to you again, 1-888, toll-free, 888-347-3258. And finally, those of you listening on the web, you know you can call us in the United States at 1-866-857-4327. If you're calling internationally, call the U.S. country code, then area code 703-443-8419, and we will take your questions. I'm going to turn it back over to Tony Chaykin, but I will be taking questions, including those lined up from the conference call. So, Tony, this was called, under Teddy Roosevelt, the bull moose option. We could call it the moose bull, I heard, but you're saying John McCain could be put up as a third party, or that was the scenario. Maybe that's passed now. Can you fill us in on that?
Well, it's a very interesting parallel because, remember, Teddy Roosevelt was the candidate originally of the enemy forces in America, the pro-British forces, the Southern Confederacy. His uncle was the head of the Confederate Secret Service in Europe, and by the Boston Brahmins, the bankers who were in the opium traffic and so forth, the real criminal elements of our country who were loyal to the British Crown. They got him on the ticket with McKinley. McKinley was then assassinated, and he got to be the president. Then after serving that term and being reelected with money from Harriman and Morgan, he was out of office. And in 1912, there was a pro-British racist dog named Woodrow Wilson who was running for president in the Democratic Party, very different from what Franklin Roosevelt was later on. And so in order to get Woodrow Wilson elected, former President Teddy Roosevelt did this trick of saying he would run against the Republican incumbent, who was running again, William Howard Taft, on a third party ticket. They called it the Bull Moose Party. And this was a tactic to split the votes of Republicans, one former president running against another an incumbent president. And that gave the election of 1912 to Woodrow Wilson, who, like Teddy Roosevelt, was in favor of the U.S. allying with Britain and bringing in things like the the income tax and the Federal Reserve. So this tactic now is full of historical memories, because it's exactly the same criminal faction, the enemy faction, the Tories that I wrote about in the treason book, that are doing this.
Well, I see. It's, in other words, it's a dirty trick, third party trick, as opposed to real dialogue. And I'm going to take a question now from Missouri for Tony, and it's from Cyril. Cyril, you can go ahead. We have Cyril on the line from Missouri. You can ask your question now, Cyril. Go right ahead. Well, while he lines it up, he was holding for a while. Maybe he's just getting ready.
Yeah, I was deceived. I thought he was going to clean up the money going into politics. And he was a veteran, and he had an image. You know, I didn't know all this background. See, my point is, it shows how you'd be deceived by these people if you don't watch it.
Well, that's Cyril. Good to hear from you, Cyril.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine. I think that's a very important question, because it's not just that he has a good program but a bad background. The whole idea of reform of politics is a very, very dangerous point of view. Many of you who listen have been raised in the last three decades with the enemy's view of reform. What they mean by reform is that the tradition of industrialization, of the progress of man's power over nature, and of a government that is owned by the voters, owned by the working people, by the common people of the country, that tradition is to be destroyed. And instead, what Teddy Roosevelt and the Boston would-be aristocrats and the old British crown wants to put instead for a social system is the idea that the government should be run by experts who are not elected and are not to be corrupted by having to get votes from anybody. And that's the idea behind campaign finance reform. Yes, it would be good to get money out of politics in the sense of not having Enron or something control politics. But the problem is that the nation's whole economy and point of view is controlled, and has been in the last several decades, by these criminals.
Cyril, do you want to continue to ask on that line, or perhaps about Joe Lieberman? You can go right ahead.
No, except that I thought I was deceived by his championing of he was a veteran, and he spoke out, at least spoke out, but I didn't know his method would have been what you said, Tony, rather than a good reform of campaign contributions,
it's the deregulation. It's the you have it the, in the last decades. You've had this deregulation of finance,
mm-hmm.
and one of the main reasons for the so-called campaign finance reform is to stop unions from giving contributions, so that you can crush labor. The real problem. Look at McCain. If he's a veteran, most people who have any real knowledge of the Vietnam War know that it was a disaster. And therefore, why would a man who was a veteran work with the most criminal circles trying to cause an insane new war that would be more disastrous than Vietnam? Why would you get behind somebody who is a Nazi like Ariel Sharon? Why should there be a Nazi in control of a Jewish state? That's a contradiction right there. Why would McCain get in the middle of that mess? It's because McCain is wholly owned by organized crime. He never was an independent man. His father and his grandfather were both admirals in a very, very questionable faction of the U.S. military. And the problem in the military is that you have these two factions. You have, at the top, you have a tradition of either the MacArthur going back to Washington. That's what Lyndon LaRouche is reviving, the statesman who goes back to the West Point engineering tradition, the nation builders, or you have this utopian crazy faction that now is putting its ugly head out to say we need a nuclear conflict. We need to have war all along the South Asia, Balkans, Middle East area to destabilize the world so the world doesn't get together and dump the Wall Street criminals. That's their reason for having a war. That's why they did the September 11th attacks. So John McCain is not a veteran in the sense of somebody that learned anything from a war.
Thanks, Cyril. And you can stay on, but we're going to turn to the conference call to a question. There's several dozen people there. A question that's been put by the moderator of that call. Bob Baker's been waiting on that one. And then we can continue this line. Bob, are you there? You can go right ahead.
Yeah, so one question I thought people might be interested in. When you compare the period when Teddy Roosevelt was doing his work to Lieberman right now, I think people might be interested in seeing some of the similarities, and plus the fact, another part that I'd like to mention is we've had a lot of action where people have been getting flyers out against McCain and Lieberman. And we just had an intervention in Iowa at the Iowa State University that really...
That was at the fair, Bob? Iowa Fair?
Yes, at the Iowa State Fair. And student leaders from Iowa State were there and hand-delivered the flyers to Lieberman. And he was so surprised he was surprised that people didn't want to talk to him, and it's even commented, covered in the newspapers up in Connecticut. But I'd like you to comment on that and how this reaction, how this leafleting is actually affecting their electability.
Okay, well, we have now something that is very unique in the world, in world history, and that is the character of an American citizen really flaunting that citizenship to say, look, I, as a citizen, am responsible for what the government does, and I'm taking it in my own hands. I'm going to meddle in the course of history. I'm going to meddle in the whole future course of mankind's history by getting involved in things that, according to the news media and the utopian faction, we have no business getting involved in. This is what LaRouche has always done and encouraged others to be as creative as possible in doing. That is the tradition of the American Revolution. The world, according to the British, the world turned upside down. That's the song they sang against the American Revolution. But what we've done by putting millions of these leaflets out and putting these reports detailing who these pro-war criminals are, everywhere in government, everywhere in the Democratic Party, in the unions, in the civil rights layers, is we have sparked people to think, to begin thinking about the insanity of the recent years in the economics and in this endless war cycle. And we have now, in the last few days, you have people like Brent Scowcroft, very, very close to George Bush Sr., come out against the attack on Iraq. Eagleburger, another character from that first Bush administration. Even Kissinger, seeing which way the wind is blowing, casting doubt on this adventure. You have a very small faction of outright criminals and crazy people around types like Richard Perle and Wolfowitz and longtime degenerates like Samuel Huntington, a very small faction with their spokesmen like Lieberman, who are still demanding that Bush go to war. And Bush is himself wavering. He just in the last 24 hours has put out a statement that he's listening to the voices like Colin Powell and others that are saying, don't do this war, it's crazy. So we're making a tremendous impact by violating all the rules of recent politics that say that you're not supposed to think on the highest level of strategy. LaRouche has always put himself in the same position as Plato, or as the designers of the Renaissance, or the Franklin and other strategists of the American Revolution, to say, it's in my hands as an individual to move nations to change history. I'm going to have to do that. And this is what every citizen should take to himself. I'd like to, what do you think, Marshall? Can I answer the other part of this about Teddy Roosevelt? The interesting parallel to the Lieberman situation is that back in the later 19th century, after the Civil War, the United States had a wonderful policy of the government deliberately promoting, with high tariffs and spending for building trains and other infrastructure, the most massive industrial and agricultural production that the world had ever seen. The U.S. was industrialized overnight and became the world's leading power by this U.S. national program. Teddy Roosevelt represented this faction in Wall Street and Boston and the worst of the Southern slave owners who were allied to Britain, who said, we must stop the further progress of this industrialization because these American nationalists are spreading it, the idea of nationalism and nation building, to Ireland, to India, to Germany, Russia, Japan, to China. Unless we stop this, the whole oligarchy is finished. So they have a guy like Teddy Roosevelt, who is himself anti-industrial. He's a feudalist. And the idea of, for example, Teddy Roosevelt's idea of closing the West to further settlement by freezing half the land and turning over the rest of that land in the West to oligarchs like Harriman on the condition that nothing is developed, no industry, no real agriculture. Don't desalinate water out of the ocean and pump it in. Don't bring rivers down from where they're plentiful into the Southwest and irrigate. Don't do any of that. Just have kind of a plantation life in a quasi-modern setting and total decadence. That was his point of view. And you have this recently where, you know, if you go back to my childhood when Franklin Roosevelt was president, I was born in 1943, and we had in the Roosevelt presidency, and for some time after that, a resurgence of the American economy under that kind of government promotion of industry, all the way up through Jack Kennedy. This was overturned after the Kennedy murder. And you get into this era of the British-style economics, where the U.S. is supposed to turn into the capital of a London-New York world empire, an Anglo-Saxon world empire, to loot the underdeveloped countries and to get the people in America to become so stupid about money or about some other personal lifestyle issues like religion or something like that, that they would turn a blind eye to the fate of humanity. Americans were famous in earlier days for being the most idealistic and optimistic people who wanted to build up the whole world, to aim at the stars. This was reflected in the Kennedy space program. We are going to do that again. When Lieberman and McCain are gone from politics, when the war is stopped by us meddling in the government and in the nation to stop it and to break the back of this faction so nobody in politics will touch this, we are in a position to go in and absolutely clean up Wall Street and get the trillions written off, these debts that are strangling the world, and go back to building up our physical economy and a future.
Now, I want to tell everyone again, you're listening to The LaRouche Show, and Anton Chaykin is with us today. He's the historian who's been working on getting out this explosive expose material on the real background of John McCain and Joe Lieberman, this false sort of third way alternative when we need the real national interest policies in the United States. Where you can get a copy of this dossier on McCain, Lieberman, the real scandal is, let me give you the phone number, 1-888-347-3258. Again, 1-888, that's toll free, EIR 3258, or check on our website where you're listening right now. You can still send in emails. I will be taking questions. In fact, in just half a minute here, I'm going to Ontario, because this is an international fight. It's not just domestic U.S. politics, and we have John on the line from up there. And as Tony said, these figures that have been concocted, these political figures concocted for no good with organized crime background and so forth, they're on the way down. So let's go right ahead. John, you can ask your question now.
Yeah. Tony, this is John Ontario. To comment on your post-Lincoln era, where in your book you said cheap transportation for food and raw materials, constantly more powerful machinery and new resources coming into use, pushed down the cost of production and prices fell continuously for a third of a century under the American system economics. My question is, why isn't this advertise more out the importance of the contributions that have been made versus like the attack on what's going on now. We don't hear very much about that, and I just wanted to comment on that.
Well, that's you're talking to something that's dear to my heart. I've been working on this for quite some time.
Let me add, his book is Treason in America, From Aaron Burr to Averill Harriman, I think was just quoted from.
We've been working on, since that book came out, the more of an idea of the Republican side, that is, the idea of the Republican, how that was responsible for all of the great achievements in U.S. and Western industry and living standards. All of it came from thinkers like LaRouche, who are the builders of the United States in opposition to this British Empire faction. The problem that everybody in Canada and the United States and Western Europe has had in recent decades is that there has been a very sophisticated attack against the American Revolution and against the concept of improvement that was the passion of the founders of the United States. For example, just to name two figures who were principally responsible at different times for building up the massive industrial power of this country, Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt, both of them subject to the most incredible slanders. Lincoln portrayed as a racist, as a tyrant and a stooge for capitalists, and Franklin Roosevelt portrayed as a communist, a tyrant, a man who planned to attack the United States, and so forth. These slanders were done by the Tories and the British and bankers like Morgan, who created the whole apparatus of attack against Franklin Roosevelt. For the purpose, and they've gotten these slanders into the black community. Lerone Bennett, the editor of Ebony magazine, wrote a most stupidest attack against Lincoln on behalf of the right wing. They've gotten these attacks out for one purpose, because they want people to think that what the U.S. is doing wrong in recent years is all there ever was, that there never was any good, that there never was a republic, that there never was an idea of the uplift of mankind, that the Declaration of Independence was false, was hypocritical. All of the slogans of George III that we fought against come out now in the popular right-wing and left-wing attacks against the idea of progress and against these American founders. This is the problem. This is why you don't hear about Henry Carey, Henry Clay, the American system of economics. In Canada, you had a guy named Isaac Buchanan in Ontario, who was the leader of the protectionists, working with Henry Carey in the late 1800s, whose work brought about the industrialization of Canada. These things you don't know about because there is a bias historically in your own mind, in the minds of the average person, against this passion for improvement for mankind's condition.
John, if you're still on the line in Ontario, you can continue on this or ask another question of Tony Chaikin if you wish.
I really appreciate what you're saying right now. That's fine. You answered my question.
Good. I'll throw in one thing while others can line up to, and I can take their calls. You can also get us at live email. If you're listening on the web, you know where it is, but it's radio@larouchepub.com. But Tony, you have raised Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in other words, figures of a tremendous buildup in domestic improvements and overtures of that, too, with foreign nations. Now, it is the case, people out there should know, that Lyndon LaRouche has commissioned just in the last few days, as far as his presidential LaRouche in 2004 campaign, a reconstruction finance and building program as what to go on in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, our hemisphere and our continent here, what we ought to be doing now, since clearly our airlines, our railroads, our public health, and our other basics are falling apart. And LaRouche will be on the air 3 o'clock August 24, live on the LaRouche Show to talk about that and anything else. But there are initiatives in this direction abroad. There's one connected to Iraq you might mention. But, Tony, do you want to say anything about either the historical or present-day opportunity for reconstruction as the real American system?
Well, I want to put LaRouche's campaign into historical perspective. LaRouche is going to be the president of the United States. He's going to be elected in 2004. This is, we're in the process of making a miracle in history. The basis for this historically is something that everyone knows who studies American history. We had, I would say, two really profound examples of this in Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt. When Lincoln ran for president, the United States was finished as a country. And he said, no, it's not. We are changing that apparent destiny of the country. The country was collapsing. There was a massive depression, hunger, chaos, and an attempt to break the country up back by Britain. Lincoln not only turned this around, but made American industry grow with government intervention to make us the greatest power in the world. He had never held office after becoming unpopular since the 1840s, when he had been in the Congress for only one term, to denounce the criminality of the then government of the United States that was making war on Mexico. And Lincoln said, that's a British-backed fraud by the slave owners. We don't want this kind of war. Later, he was made president because he had the guts to stand up to public opinion. It was a total miracle. With Franklin, and the enemy was criminal. The Southern Confederacy was a criminal operation backed by the British Empire. The same thing with Franklin Roosevelt. He came in, as Lincoln did, with a new party. The Democratic Party had existed, but Franklin Roosevelt said, we're going to make it into something new. We're going to make a coalition of the ordinary people of this country to work with me against Wall Street, who have destroyed this country's economy and are threatening to make us a fascist country, as the British Empire is moving in a fascist way. He vehemently criticized the British during the 1930s for backing Hitler. Wall Street was backing Hitler as well. The opposition to Franklin Roosevelt were criminals. Roosevelt pulled off a miracle by organizing a new coalition and getting swept into office in the middle of a devastating depression in which everybody in this country thought that the country could easily end as a nation. He turned that around and again restored the majestic power of this country. Under the present circumstances, the United States in recent years has been depressed morally, socially, psychologically, and economically. Lyndon LaRouche, from the very beginning of this change in our country's mission, denounced this, posed the alternative, and said, Americans, remember your heritage. Remember the heritage of the Renaissance and the American Revolution. We must rebuild civilization. He is now making the final drive to become the president in the tradition of Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt. And we have this criminal enemy to clean up, and we're going to do it. We want your help.
So the kind of thing that you've put together in a dossier, that's Tony Chaikin on the LaRouche Show here as our guest, was commissioned by LaRouche, I think only about 6 or 7 weeks ago, something right, like the unauthorized biography of Joe Lieberman, or you could say the unauthorized biography of John McCain. But, Tony, it's not secret. It just hasn't been assembled in the way.
It's not secret at all. The fun part of this, folks, you know, Michael Steinhardt, this billionaire speculator mobster that backed Lieberman, put out his autobiography. He calls it No Bull. It came out last year. And he boasts about his criminal background. He boasts about his father's best friend, Vincent Jimmy Blue Eyes Allo, who was the hitman for Meyer Lansky. He describes him as a grandfatherly type. And these people in his background set the context for him to do things like try to corner the market in U.S. Treasury bonds, for which the government went after him. This is the less than colorful, simply dull devastators of the U.S. economy in the recent years. These are the people that stole all the industries, that looted every industry in this country, looted Mexico, looted Russia, and have brought the world to the brink of a war that could be a nuclear war. We have got to get them out. In their own words, they are the worst menace this country has ever faced.
Well, in the speaking of past menaces, too, one call has come in from Morgantown, West Virginia. And looking again backwards at some of the menaces, there, this questioner, I think he's not still with us, but he was saying there was trust busting that was going on. Was this false reform or real reform under Taft?
Teddy Roosevelt was known as a trust buster by his own propaganda. And this was really the tail end of the propaganda against railroads and great industries like this, the Carnegie steel industry, in favor of Morgan. Morgan was backing, the J.P. Morgan, the Anglo-American banker, was backing Teddy Roosevelt to falsely appear as a populist against big money, whereas in fact, and making propaganda about Rockefeller and so forth. In fact, under Teddy Roosevelt, the final trustification, cartel, and monopolization of all the industry under Morgan took place. This was the biggest lie in American history, that Teddy Roosevelt was some sort of a reformer who was going to bust up the trusts. It was the trusts that were formed in the Teddy Roosevelt era that were copied by the Wall Street and London guys that set up the cartels like IG Farben in Germany that led to the Nazis.
So in other words, we have another case of, we could call it false reform. We've had Senator John McCain be presented as a reformer, but just like the Teddy Roosevelt reformer trust buster, it's just part of continuation of this undermining. Well, I want to thank Tony Chaikin for being on the LaRouche Show today, and encourage everyone to get the dossier that he and others are putting out on the real scandal behind the false alternative John McCain and Joe Lieberman. And you can get that at 1-888-347-3258 or look on the web. And be sure that next week, every week on Saturday, the LaRouche Show will be live on the web Eastern Time from 3 to 4. And on August 24th, for that full hour, Lyndon LaRouche will be on live on the show, taking questions from the conference call and from others. You can send email live at that time, arrange meetings at that time. And again, I want to encourage everyone to get the dossier and to call in for this mass leafleting campaign. It's one of those turning point periods of history in which we are making history. And the one example as far as latest events in the world is, you do see that when it comes to good old American Reconstruction, like under FDR, when it comes to the opposite of war in Iraq, yesterday Russia and Iraq signed an agreement for a 5-year, $40 billion reconstruction program.
Railroads.
The LaRouche Show next week.